Welcome back to Saturday Miss. We have Kirk here. This is normally Kirk's day off, but I think we're having too much fun with Proverbs 6 for my friend to take the day off. How are you, Kirk?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I was couldn't believe the military Bible stick made its way back into the SRN rotation. I'm sure you heard that. You know, they were talking about some things that are actually true. That the military Bible stick is, since it is a recording of the New Testament, it really is the Bible.
Oh, yes.
They don't know what that means, that Bible means with Baal, in Baal, and that Baal is the name and title that Yahweh uses to describe Satan because he wants to lord over not only God, but humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know that that Bible is based on the Hebrew word Babel, which means to confuse.
Yeah.
And that the Christian New Testament is corruption, it's confusion, it's with the Lord, it's satanic, extraordinarily errant. And there's very little of it that have any merit, and the parts that have any merit the Christian doesn't pay any attention to. Like, for example, the Sermon on the Mount. I found in Montaigne and the Olivet Discourse, as well as most of Matthew, is particularly as they're he's assailing the religious establishment.
Mm-hmm.
So there are aspects of it that are truth in advertising. It is, as the Christian New Testament, it is therefore Babel.
Yeah.
That part's true. But to think that God loves the soldier, that God is protecting the soldier, that he's there with the soldier, that that might be the Christian God, but ain't the real God.
No. There's also the merchandising end of it. As I was listening to it, I was trying to remember how the Gideons used to give their Bibles away for free.
Uh-huh.
You know, and these guys, they won't even give away a 25-cent stick.
Yeah, the 25-cent stick. They want you to buy for $25.
Yeah.
And you're guilted into it. It's kind of like the longevity ad that is, if you're in the military, you can save America by joining the pyramid scheme. You know, they're making merchandise out of men. Ooh. I mean, how do you sleep at night doing that kind of stuff?
I don't know. That disturb you. Should disturb you.
It should. You know, that's why when God was telling the apathetic individual, that's when you say it should disturb you, but it's not disturbing Americans, because most Americans, the people who exist today are apathetic. And so God is saying, oh, apathetic and lethargic one, you know, you should see, observe and examining the conduct of the ant in her ways. And if you observe the conduct of the ant and her ways, you'll be wise. It says, and it's wa chatkum, be knowledgeable. You'll understand. You'll be prudent and thus empowered. And then the next thing he says, it's just so clear what God doesn't like. And he says, you know, what the ant doesn't have, it doesn't have a leader or a ruler, no commander or officer, no government or imposed authority, no dictator, no chief, no prince, no royalty, no superior individual or magistrate.
They even operate without a middle management.
Yeah, then the next one is the middle management. No work foreman, no public official, no clerk, no scribe, no civil servant. And then it goes on to say, and by the way, and no media. Record keeper or scribe, nor, and this is the one that is so indicting of religion and politics, no one claiming to be in charge or control, especially no Lord to reign over her. So with Yahweh having produced this fatherly advice to his children, why is it that so many people are in a religion whose dominant letter is to the Romans, where Paul writes that governments were imposed by God and that you should submit to them. That is the absolute opposite of what God is instructing here. How can you believe that this testimony, which is you carry around in your book named the Babel, was inspired by God when the wannabe apostle is saying, no, the opposite is true, because I say so. Now, the Roman government, it was established for your good, and God's calling it the most vicious beast of all of human history.
Yeah, let's pray for your president and pull the flags into the church. How do you fight against church and state and then have flags hanging out in front of your church or whatever?
They all do.
They do. Yeah.
In fact, they even have the American flag inside the churches, all the churches that I've gone to.
Yeah, they.
Flags outside, flags inside.
Yeah, well, I went to one that way.
Yeah.
So do they not get that part?
No, obviously not. And then, speaking of those who are just deadbeats living off entitlements, she prepares her food in the summer. She gathers in the harvest of storable food, serving as a source of nourishment. You know, I don't think God right here is actually talking about food. Because what comes next is that the person is going to come in claiming to be authorized and in control, and you're going to be found wanting.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be found wanting because you don't have your disaster supplies and cans of food on the shelves. What he's saying here is that his testimony, his Torah, is nourishing.
Mm-hmm.
And that you aren't prepared in advance, if you haven't, when times are good, when you have the opportunity, equip yourself with an understanding of the Torah, understanding of his covenant, then when this man who claims to be an apostle comes into your life or influences your world, you're going to be ill-prepared. You've got to know in advance to ward off the evil.
Yes, exactly that.
So, not talking about food here. It's not saying the ant is really clever and it prepares in advance. It says that no, the key thing here is when you have the opportunity, you need to take advantage of it and observe the Torah. Just like you observe the ant, observe the Torah.
Yeah.
He says, because ultimately a little laziness, a little inactivity, lethargy and inactive hands, and what you're going to find is that he will come.
Yeah.
Walking and behaving like a leader, like a guide, taking control, and you are going to lack what's needed. You're going to be impoverished. And you're going to have a scarcity of something absolutely vital, needing what you do not have, causing you to be bereaved and diminished. I think that the primary reason, if not the primary reason, certainly a significant reason, that there are so many people maligned by Christianity, duped by Christianity, is that they don't know the Torah. That if they knew the Torah, they wouldn't be fooled by it.
No. That was my problem.
I didn't know the Torah.
Didn't know the Torah.
Yeah.
I knew the stories, but that's about it.
But you carried it around in the book.
Yeah. And I tried to read it a lot. But I could understand Genesis for the most part, but a lot of it is very confusing when you're reading King James, even if you study Shakespeare and speak.
And the language is, the translations are horrible. Yeah, the translations are horrible. And, you know, how do you understand something like, I do not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain? And you're, and you've been told that means you shouldn't say goddamn.
Right.
And yet, God is not a name. Vain speaks of either egotistically in a failed way.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you take a name?
Good question.
I can say your name. I can ignore your name. I can give you a different name. I can't take your name.
No.
And so you read the King James and you say, well, God, this is...
Then you have to go to a priest or a preacher and say, what does that mean? And they'll tell you. That's where they leave it with you. You know, it's, you cannot understand. I couldn't understand Paul. I mean, I used to hear him and listen to those sermons and take notes on them, and I could, and I, honest to gosh, I would go back and look at it, read it, and I'd say, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
I mean,
even if you're talking about the best of Paul, which would be his love chapter in Corinthians, and you listen to it and you say, but wait a minute. How could love not be jealous when God tells us that he's jealous?
Yeah, what?
I mean, you're saying that God isn't love. But yet you claim that God is love, he claims that he's jealous, and you say that love is not jealous. And then you're claiming that love never fails, when in fact, and since God has obviously failed with 99.9% of humanity, that he's a failure. That if love never fails and you've condemned the Torah as not being able to save, then what does that say about the God of the Torah?
Got some problems there.
Yeah, and he says, you know, love is the thing you ought to ascribe to, and if you don't love, then you're nothing but a loud clanging gong. And yet, what did he say about the three most prominent disciples? Didn't he call them supposed and pretend?
Mm-hmm.
Specifically condemn Shimon Kefesh?
Oh, yeah.
Condemned him in writing.
Huh?
And didn't he say to all of those who are Torah observant that I wish you were castrated?
Yeah, he did.
In fact, he went out and just shows his absolute animosity towards what he would have you believe as a Judaizer. So obviously, he's not a very loving dude, is he?
No. Well, even the Judaizer remark, I mean, who are we talking about? I mean, they were not, you've got established religious Judaism, right. Rabbinical Judaism, and you've got disciples were certainly not of the same
right.
ilk.
Right.
You know? And so who is he talking about? Because they robbed.
Who is he talking about? Right.
They robbed most people against the religious group. So
Yosha was
anti that.
Was anti Judaism and anti Christianity, but anti religion.
Yeah.
And the disciples were hunted down by the religious authority.
Yeah.
And there is no example in human history of religious Jews. Judaizing.
Yeah.
They just don't do it. They never have done it. It's the whole thing is just this whole concoction that Paul created to create an adversary. His adversary was the Jews, because the Jews are Yahweh's witnesses. They're his chosen people. So he, on behalf of Satan, decided that he would create animosity towards them, which has lasted throughout the centuries.
Yeah. So knowing it's a straw man he's making, why does no one ever catch it?
Oh, man. The first thing you read, you know, when you're trying to understand who is he lashing out against, when he says, you know, he has a different, an entirely different message.
Yeah.
And he's comparing it to the Jewish message, but it's the Jewish message. His animosity in Galatians is the disciples. So it's not the Jewish religious message, it's the disciples' message that he is opposing.
Because he's already embraced, in another breath, he's already embraced his training under Gamaliel.
Gamaliel, yeah. Oh, yeah, he loves rabbinic Judaism.
So that's not it.
He hates the disciples. That's who he hated. That's who he went to war against. And by the way, every Christian theologian knows it. That Paul cannot be an apostle because he is opposed to the apostles, but yet that's what he claimed to be. In fact, this is descriptive of him. It says, a wicked and worthless person, an unjust, false, evil, and vain individual, egotistical and invalid, corrupt and harmful, relationally damaging, untrue and fraudulent, religious man goes about with perverse and corrupt speech. Whoa.
What major thing did he say that wasn't twisted?
Nothing.
I can't find anything. Don't pick out some little, I love is this and...
And everything that he, even that's twisted. It's there's no part of that that's accurate.
No.
It's all inconsistent with Yahweh's own testimony. And here he uses distortions. What he did, his whole technique was to take something in the Torah or prophets out of context, truncate it so that he didn't even have a complete sentence, and then misrepresent it, misquote it, to create a distorted perception of what God was saying. So, like Bernie says, you know, it is the Torah can't save because it is by faith that one lives, and he's quoting Habakkuk, when in reality the passage says that the only means to life is through knowing the Torah. That's how it's knowing the Torah that one should live. And so he's taken a passage, misquoted it out of context to pervert its meaning. It's disgusting. It's warped, to use God's term. It's crooked, twisted, perverted, perverse, warped, wayward, and deviant.
When the rabbi comes to Yahusha and says, how do I get saved? And he tells him, he scolds him because he doesn't know the very Torah that he's supposed to be representing.
Right.
So when he says, that's where you find the answer, and he does that all the time.
All the time. Yeah. How can I be saved? People come to me and say, so what does it say? Yeah.
So how do you kill the Torah when Yahusha is saying, beside the point, don't change Jot Natal.
Right.
Why can't you do it when everywhere he goes, he said, the answer's in the Torah, and then he quotes it verbatim. They know, you've got to know that if you're a scholar. I mean, if you study this is your life's work. You have to know that.
You have to know that. And so how are you representing a religion that claims the opposite?
So what type of dog are you that's following?
Oh, yeah, a dog. I don't want to speak beast march dogs.
Insult my dog by saying
that. A sinister winking of his eyes, a subtle shuffling of his feet, all while casting aspersions with his fingers. With confusing and false perceptions which invert reality. Boy, that is the essence of Pauline doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a confusing and false perception which inverts reality in his heart. He devises and inscribes. There's only one of these guys that wrote. Antagonistic schemes without consideration of the consequence, engraving and writing down wicked plans which conceal the truth, drawing lines in the sand whereby the ends justify their means. Wow. Boy, the ends justifying the means, Paul's conclusion to the Torah observant, I prepared to pretend to be Torah observant even though I'm not. To the Jew, I pretend to be a Jew. To the Gentile, I'm a Gentile. I'm going to be whatever I need to be to take advantage of people. That's what this is. The ends justify the means. That's what this verb is communicating. He's a Machiavellian character.
He
devises and describes antagonistic schemes without consideration of the consequence to conceal the truth, which are evil and adversarial, objectionable and wrong, depraved and perverse, malignant and miserable, universally harmful in everything, continuously creating controversies and strife, pretending to be one who was sent out as a messenger to do away with something important. Is there anybody that claimed to be an apostle of God other than Paul?
Not in that group. Not during that time. I mean, you may have somebody coming along who says, I am he, but no.
But anybody well enough known to have this proverb be written a thousand years in advance?
Not at all.
Anyone well enough known, even up to this day, that would justify a Yahweh describing this lone individual?
No.
That would have had speeches and writings that were conniving, that were perverted, that twisted, and gave an improper perspective of something very important, all to create a breaching of the relationship?
No, all the writings of all the churches at this point have all stemmed from there.
Yeah, lots of people have been critical of the Old Testament, but they don't claim to be an apostle while doing it.
No, that's true. That's true.
So there really is no other candidate here but Paul. This is right into the wheelhouse of Pauline Christianity. So then he says, upon this, therefore, suddenly, surprisingly, openly, albeit briefly, he will arrive with his destructive opposition and ruinous calamity, in his disastrous animosity, in his violent rancor between parties, his harmful attacks. Boy, that's, you read Galatians, that this is depicting Galatians. He will smash and shatter, breach and break something vital, and as a result, he will suffer. Who?
Yeah.
Who breached the covenant?
Only Paul.
Yeah, he said that, you know, the covenant that was memorialized in the Torah in slaves, it was all about slavery, and therefore he had to have a new one, and the only one that speaks of a new one is Paul. Breached and broken. In fact, he spoke of the condition of the original covenant, its sign, circumcision. It says if you're circumcised, you cannot be saved. I mean, you can't breach it more than that, right? One says, unless you have the sign of the covenant, you can't be included in the family and therefore saved. That's God's position and Paul's position. But if you are showing the sign of the covenant, that you've accepted the covenant, then you cannot be saved. Now, how could you have a more contentious view than that?
I'm trying to pretend to be like a debater, and I have no remark.
Yeah, there is no response to that. In fact, you know what God says? God says, there is no remedy. There's no cure for that. That's the next line. There is no remedy. There is no cure for that. There is nothing you can do to solve Pauline Christianity. God doesn't have a cure. He can't save you from Pauline Christianity. You can leave Pauline Christianity, which was God's first suggestion here, and you can be saved. But while you're a Pauline Christian, you can't be saved. Behold, presently these six things Yahweh hates, and seven are an abomination. So for him to make this transition with Hina, now, at this present time, pay attention. The transition is from this one who's going to come upon the scene, who is going to arrive with destructive opposition, with ruinous animosity, who's going to smash and shatter something vital for which there will be no remedy or cure. And then he says, behold, presently, now at this present time, there are six things Yahweh hates, and seven, they're an abomination to his soul. He's speaking of Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the six things that he hates about Paul. These are the seven abominations that Paul has brought upon his soul and all of those who buy into him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the context here. So the first is haughty eyes and visions of grandeur, observations, including a rebellious perspective. That was probably the thing that made Paul most like the demon that possessed him.
Mm-hmm.
His not only haughty view, but visions of grandeur. You know, Paul claimed to be the most important person in the world, God's lone messenger to the Gentiles.
You
could not egomaniac. Yeah, absolute egomaniac. And his claim was totally contrary to Yosha's claim for his disciples, and yet Paul claimed that he was getting inspiration from the same one that he was now contradicting with his claim. Egomaniac.
Yeah, didn't Yahweh just say, be like the ant without leaders, without rulers?
Right.
What do you need them for?
And Paul here is saying, you know, I'm the grandiose one.
I had to complete what Yosha couldn't do. I mean, that alone should kick him out of any discussion.
Yeah. So you got the ant that's a little creature that just gets along, that doesn't need a leader. And here's God, he says, haughty eyes, visions of grandeur, self-exalting attitude or public display. Proud. You know, Paul admits that he is. In fact, Paul says, my pride, my arrogance was so out of control that Satan had to demon-possess me to keep me under control.
What a thing to say.
What a thing to say. But he wrote it down. You can go read 2 Corinthians right at the end of it, the last chapter of 2 Corinthians. Paul is laying it all out. That's exactly what he says. The second thing that God despises about Paul and Pauline Christianity is a deceptive tongue.
Well, who likes a liar? I mean, who?
Well, apparently Americans do, because we've elected and reelected liars.
Yeah.
I don't vote for them, but there are lots of people that do.
Yeah.
So deceptive tongues, false and misleading statements, rhetoric which leads to mistaken beliefs. Number three is hands that shed innocent blood. Boy, now you've got politicians that he's thrown under the bus, and number two, you've got the military.
Mm-hmm.
So the government and the military. And, you know, he's just gone. He said, you know, notice the ant. The ant doesn't have any of these things, and I'm praising the ant. You can learn from the ant. And now he's going through and saying, you know, the societal leaders, those with visions of grandeur, look above the crowd, liars, politicians, deceptive tongues, military, hands that shed innocent blood. Four is a heart which devises and writes troublesome, idolatrous, unjust, false, and evil plans. That's the religious.
Mm-hmm.
So first you've got your societal leaders, particularly but societal leaders of all kinds. But let's say those who want to be seen above the crowd. Delusions of grandeur. The second is a deceptive tongue. You're dealing with politicians. The third is hands that shed innocent blood. You're dealing with the military.
Mm-hmm.
And number four is the religious. Because it's the religious that are writing troublesome, idolatrous, unjust, false, and evil plans, religious plans, because this is Aeon, which is the name of the center of Egyptian religious life.
Yeah.
So this is religious plans. And you know, God doesn't care if you write a political scheme that's, you don't write one that's idolatrous. You can write one that's troubling. You can write one that's, you know,
evil.
Perhaps evil, but... How would you say that it's a false political plan? But religions are false.
Mm-hmm.
Religious claims are false. Religious claims are evil. Religious claims are unjust. Religious claims are idolatrous. And so he's talking about religious here. You know, an attitude which devises and writes troublesome, idolatrous, false religious plans.
Yeah. So when I translated it, I didn't pick up a win like you did. That was that kind of seals the deal. The religious center.
Yeah, the religious center near Cairo, and you know the transliterated aven, but there's no V in Hebrew, and it's written AWN, so it's got to be Aon. Means wicked, egotistical, invalid, unreliable, corrupt, harmful, relationally damaging, untrue, fraudulent, and religious, indistinguishable from Awin, a prominent Egyptian religious center near Cairo.
Yeah.
Those are the plans. Now, here's the victims. Now, this could be the victims of those who are the grunts in the military. Party members and politics as opposed to the leaders, the religious devotees as opposed to the believers, as opposed to the perpetrators, because he says feet which rashly and impetuously run to and fro, darting about, to associate with that which is evil.
Yeah, that's the crowd.
That's the crowd. And he's using visual expressions. You know, you've got eyes and hands and now feet, hearts prior to that. But he's using these visuals because when he speaks in the Sermon on the Mount, on the way is narrow and few find it that leads to life, and the way is broad and popular, and many find it that leads to death and destruction.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the path that we take.
Path we take, yes, exactly.
Yeah, and the religious path leads to death. And what God is saying here is that the thing that He hates. And that also is an abomination, because these are an abomination to your soul, and He hates them, is this idea of impetuously darting to and fro and running to your own demise. But isn't that the nature of religion? People don't do it. You know, I'm going to read all about this. Can you imagine somebody converting to Islam? I'm going to read everything that can be known about Muhammad, find out that he was a pedophile, a rapist, a terrorist, engaged in the slave trade, was a mass murderer, and an avowed liar, and that most of his Quran is plagiarized and twisted. And say, you know, gee, with all the contradictions, with all of the historical errors in it, all the scientific errors in it about the sun going to bed in a muddy spring at night, I think I'm going to think my way to it. I'm convinced that I'm going to become a Muslim. You know, imagine doing that. It doesn't happen. And so people run through their minds. We arranged for the Lusitania to be sunk, and what happened? Americans, by the hundreds of thousands, ran to the military to go kick some German behind. We sunk the Maine. Americans, by the hundreds of thousands, started waving the flag so they could go kick some Spanish behind. We made up the Gulf of Tonkin affair. And so Americans went to war against Vietnam. We made up the story of weapons of mass destruction. And so Americans went to war in Iraq. We made up the story of Afghanistan participating in 9/11, so we invaded Afghanistan. People just without thinking, like lemmings, what he's saying here. This is the lemming example.
Yeah.
Walk off the cliff to their own demise, unthinking about it. So what's the sixth thing that's... Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, why is that? I mean, God, I grew up in Vietnam was going on, and everybody was questioning it.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't avoid the draft, so, you know, when they called me, I had to leave Australia and come back, so that was no choice, but I read all about it. I said, my God, we give them guns, go through Czechoslovakia, we do this, we've armed an army over there, and we've done all this stuff, we still trade with them. And they're not a threat to me. They're not a threat to California.
Right.
And nobody in Australia was sitting there going, oh, my God, the Vietnamese are coming.
Yeah, American companies provided the weapons that were being supplied by the Russians. We provided all the technology, built the factories for the weapons that were being given by the Russians to the North Vietnamese to have them fight a proxy war against America to prop up a corrupt government. And you say, why are you there? And what on earth are you? There is nothing you can accomplish here. Why are you sacrificing American lives here?
Yeah. So what happened that we rush off to war so quickly?
I mean,
I knew there were Arabs and Egyptians who were on the plane, and I never got the connection to Iraq. I thought he was an ally that was fighting Iran for, you know, back in those days. So I mean, what?
Yeah, before we attacked Iraq, I wrote and gave hundreds of public appearances as a guest on talk radio shows saying, this is insane, and this is what it's going to lead to. And it played out exactly as I said it would, and yet Americans were 90% in favor of the invasion. You know, it's just, we're thoughtless. And that's when God says, you know, rather than feeling sorry for the apathetic individual that runs to rally around the flag. You know, I was listening to the beginning of a sporting event the other day. I don't know if it was the football game or the baseball game, and the announcer said, "Now will you all rise, stand at attention, remove your hats, and put your hand over your heart as we sing a tribute to our country." Now I would be running with my feet at that point to the concession stands, hoping that I would avoid it. Now number six is a maligning soul whose breath utters sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony, which incites the deluded to worship false gods. This is also religious. Now, you could, if you wanted to, say that the writers who were writing that which is troublesome and false could be academia. You know, that's the core of their being, is to devise and write that which is untrue. But academia typically doesn't scheme with plans. So it's really hard to say that that's anything other than religion, religion and politics. But this last one, number six, man, it is wholly and completely religious. A maligning soul which utters sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony, which incites the deluded to worship false gods. And it says that this person is doing so as a false witness. So this is somebody claiming to be inspired by God that is encouraging people to worship a false god, a Jesus Christ, an Allah, a Lord, a Buddha. Or may I say, the legacy of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. So God says that this false witness is an abomination that he hates. The seventh one here is an abomination to the soul of the individual. And then one who claims to be sent out as a messenger to do away with something important, creating controversy and contentious strife between brothers. Now, in the first reference of this, which is what I was saying, that this is Paul, because he claimed to be sent out as a message to do away with something important. And I said the thing that is important is the Torah and its covenant, creating controversy and strife. This is between brothers, betwixting, tearing apart brothers, those who are related.
Right.
So
he's always
now he's talking about something that has to do with what Yahweh would call a brother.
Right.
You know, he's not talking about the flesh and blood brother of this individual, but something that would tear apart brothers. And the brothers that, when he's speaking of this, it's usually Yisrael.
Yeah, the covenant brothers, right?
Yeah. And this is a strife
Chinese here, so eliminate everything, and what do you have left? That's all you have left. So we know exactly what he's talking about. This is not right. Hard math to do.
You've got the founder of Rabbinic Judaism, which would be Akiba, or Maimonides, the Rambam, who came a number of centuries later.
Yeah.
But they don't meet this criterion. They didn't tear apart the brothers. They unified the brothers. Or unified them the wrong way, but they didn't tear them apart.
Yeah.
Paul went to war against the disciples. Went to war against them. The covenant brothers was Paul's primary enemy. My son. Now, this is the answer to this. Heavenly Father's advice. My son, closely observe, attentively focusing upon the directions and terms of the binding covenant contract.
And that's easy.
Of your father. And do not actually forego or reject the Torah, which is the teaching and guidance of your mother. Wow.
Yeah, that's You can't translate that anyway, but one.
So, you know, all the way through this, I've made the assumption, formed the conclusion, and stated that the thing that was being rejected and breached was the Torah and its covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And here now, when God says, here's the things that I hate, and he describes this awful individual and what he's going to do, his advice to us is, my son, closely observe and attentively focus upon the directions and terms of the binding covenant contract of your father, and do not actually forego or reject the Torah, the teaching and guidance of your mother. It means that that assumption wasn't much of an assumption, was it?
No, when you read this, so if you're going to attack the mitzvah, if you're going to attack the terms and conditions, and you're going to say no circumcision, then who are you against? There's only one group you can be against. Who are the brothers? That's them.
Correct.
Who else is involved with this?
Yeah, and keep in mind here, what did Paul write in Galatians? What did Paul write in Romans? That there were two covenants, not one, and that the old covenant enslaved, and that the new covenant was the one that he was advocating. So when Yahweh says, closely observe and attentively focus upon the directions and terms of the binding contract, the mitzvah, the relationship agreement of the father,
and
the father only has one relationship agreement.
Yeah, this is my...
One set of terms and conditions for it, and it is... eternal from his perspective, and at the time this was written, there was only the one. That's the one that Paul annulled. If you want to look right at the crux of Pauline doctrine, it was to annul the covenant as it's proclaimed in the Torah, and to disparage the Torah in the process.
And the only person that would want to do that is someone who is like Satan. Otherwise,
right.
Why would you care?
Why would you care?
I mean, if you're a Buddhist, why do you care? So it's nobody else. He's the
correct.
Only one who needs to care, and that's Satan.
Right. Well, Buddhism doesn't have a binding relationship contract.
So,
Buddhism doesn't have a Torah. But this is the Torah. And so that's it. It's at this point, when he says the antidote for the one who is going to provide false testimony, claiming to be an apostle, misleading, then when the antidote is the Torah and its covenant to keep you from being misled by this individual, being condemned by this individual, you're affirming that there's only one individual in all of human history that this was written against, Paul, and that the only antidote for Pauline Christianity is to know the Torah and its covenant. That's the truth.
Right.
It wasn't until I tried to compare the Torah that Paul says was pornography with his writings that you say, wait a minute, it's rationally impossible. There isn't a 0% possibility that Paul could be telling the truth when he claims to have been chosen and inspired by the very God whose testimony he was condemning. It's not possible. The very premise of Pauline Christianity, annulling God's testimony while claiming to speak for God, is rationally impossible. But how would you know that? Well, you could know that. By the way, you could know that without knowing the Torah. Because Paul's so harsh against the Torah and its covenant. And he claims that, you know, it's the same God that inspired him. So just reading Galatians alone is enough to reject Paul and Pauline Christianity. But when you compare everything that grew out of Paul and Pauline Christianity to the Torah, the only antidote for the New Testament, for your military Bible study, is to know the one and only covenant. If you know the directions, the terms and conditions of the covenant, you are not going to be out there buying or listening to a military Bible study. Now, why do you think he calls it the covenant, the directions and terms of the binding contract of your father and the Torah teaching of your mother?
because the spiritual mother is the one that guides us.
Yeah, it is. And the family God's talking about is the covenant family.
Right to us, everything. So, I mean, that's the,
right.
That's the vehicle, if you will, you know, that is with us.
Yeah, it's our Heavenly Father's covenant family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the insights that the set-apart spirit helps us appreciate from the Torah.
Right.
That, but you know, it's not just this want to be bumping a log that I'm going to sit around and I'm going to wait for the Spirit to inspire me. The Spirit, the set apart Spirit, is going to help you when you're reading the Torah.
Yeah. Help me know.
It helps you understand when you're engaged in this process. Then God says, choose to fasten them upon your heart, continuously electing of your own free will to place them as an adornment around your neck. In your walking, she will continuously lead and guide you, accompanying you. When you rest, she will watch over you. And when you awake, she will communicate with you, enabling you to seriously consider the situation and the instructions. Let's return to that, those insights tomorrow.